and welcome to Beyond Reproach. I'm Stephanie Domingo.
I'm Tux Lurzel.
Okay, that was new. I like that you're like freestyling it. This is the show where we read listener mail and we discuss our feelings on specific topics related to American history, politics, and culture. Mm-hmm. This mini, we are talking about media representation of marginalized groups and why it's important to us. That was what we talked about last episode, I should say. And this is the feedback that we're getting right now that we've received.
This is our like listener mail episode. Mailbag.
Old timey mailbags.
So today I'm going to start with a message from my friend Kat, who's actually my French teacher. I don't know if same thing, right?
Same thing, yeah.
She says, "Hi, Tux and Stephanie. I loved your episode on media representation. I'm a fat woman, formerly a fat girl / teenager, so I can only speak to my experience with representation, which is shockingly limited considering how many of us are out there. Sure, body positivity has been mentioned about a million times over the past couple of years, but mentioning body positivity usually conjures the image of a thin white woman in exercise clothes being unashamed of her stretch marks, which she absolutely should be, but rather than being associated with fat politics as it was intended to be."
Yes, it was supposed to be a revolutionary movement where all bodies were deserving of respect. Imagine that.
Yeah. Yeah. When it comes to TV and film, there's just not all that much to choose from in terms of good fat characters, though a few shows and movies have been working to change that recently, like Shrill, which goes to show how real a fat character can be when actual fat people work on the show.
Yes. Telling their own stories.
Yeah.
Who'd have thunk it?
I know. Well, that's like the same thing we were saying in the last episode, that like there's a difference between a gay character written by a straight person.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
If we go back about a decade or so, fat characters usually fall into one of maybe four categories. The sassy fat friend who only exists to move forward her prettier, read thinner, friend's storyline.
Correct.
The sexless fat person. Or their foil, the aggressively sexual fat person, usually a woman, usually played for laughs because, gross, who would have sex with a fat woman?
Ugh. Terrible.
And the punchline fat person who exists only to prove that fat people are there to be the butt of the joke. For me, though, I finally found a character that I connected with and felt so similar to in a British show from the early 2010s called My Mad Fat Diary. She says this is, you can find it on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen it. I haven't seen it. I haven't finished it all, but it's very good.
I need to watch it. I haven't seen it at all. The show is based on the diaries of a fat teenage girl living in a small town in England during the late 80s, though the show is set in the 90s. Ray, the lead character, is a fat, tall teen girl who starts the series as being recently released from a hospital following a suicide attempt. And the show generally follows her being reintroduced to her life and how she joins a friend group and does lots of normal teen things, but while dealing with mental issues and anxiety and her awareness of being different from the people she spends time with. Ray is obsessed with music, has crushes on boys, fights with her mom, and struggles with her body image, which are all such universal things. Mm-hmm. But for me, to see these concepts played out with an actual complex fat character was so gratifying. Ray is by no means perfect. In fact, she is often selfish and sometimes vindictive. But she is a teenager trying to find her place, and so was I. Though admittedly, I was a few years older. I loved her because I saw so much of myself in her, both positive and negative. The show dealt with some heavy things, such as the suicide attempt, eating disorders, generally food shame or binging, the anxiety of eating in front of other people while fat, the good fatty versus bad fatty dilemma, and wanting to just fit in with your friends when your size makes you feel like you never will. Ray is complicated, and her relationship with her body mirrored my own. She wasn't always confident in herself, but she also didn't constantly feel the need to lose weight. She just was. I'll wrap this up before I get too into my feelings, but I want to mention one moment on the show that I had never seen before, but had imagined about a bajillion times. And that is a fantasy that Ray has about unzipping her skin, pulling it off, and revealing the skinny girl inside of her. I had similar thoughts and fantasies during my teen years, just because I thought it would make things easier, it would make boys like me more, it would make me fit in, and I had never seen this thought represented before, so I was shocked the first time I saw it. I'm more confident in myself now and no longer think about something like that anymore, but I will never forget this moment of being so acutely seen, especially since it is not a particularly happy thing, but a complicated and messy thing, which is just really how I was and still am sometimes. I've definitely thought about that too.
Yeah,
I mean,
me too.
Always had weight issues and yeah, I'm sure that anyone can imagine that kind of thing. There's always something that you think about yourself that, you know what I mean, that you wish you could just walk away from.
And yeah. So many people struggle with their weight. We're kind of made to struggle by the diet industry, and it's her message is really relatable to me, like really hits home. I just imagine like what my life would be like if I wasn't dieting since I was, well, I've stopped, but throughout my teens and my 20s and even in my early 30s, just all the power that we give up as like women and femmes and men and everyone, like focusing on our bodies instead of focusing on things that are important, like changing the world.
And yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I was in like middle school and all through high school, I used to go to like a weight doctor with my mom, and she and I would both be on diets together.
Oh, that's such a common story too. Yeah. Like there's Weight Watchers for children now.
Yeah.
It's so gross.
Yeah.
It's so damaging. I think the statistic is like 3 out of 4 people who start dieting, maybe it's less, but get an eating disorder because of it. Man. It's like, this is doing harm.
I mean, it makes sense. Like I can certainly understand why people would. It's a miracle that I never did.
I definitely ate in really disordered ways, and I had to stop. And now I feel like I have my life back.
Yeah. Kat goes on to say, sorry to ramble so long, but I'm looking forward to your next episode. Kat.
Thanks, Kat.
Yeah. She also included a link to that scene.
Yeah.
We'll try and figure out if there's a way to put it on Facebook or Instagram or something.
We'll put it in the show notes, but
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure there's a way to take a clip of it and put it on Instagram, maybe.
I think we figured out how to do that at some point.
So we also received an email from a wonderful woman named Lauren. She writes, "Dear Steph and Tux, I have a deep belief in the need to actively remove Western patriarchal ways of thinking and believing from our bodies, spirit, and heart. These ways of thinking are embodied in us all. They show up in the ways that we communicate, how we see each other, and the way that we treat our bodies. We inherit it from our lineage, what we are taught in school as little kids, and what we face when we go to work in offices, visit museums, walk down the street, see a movie. For example, the other day, someone showed me a quote by James Joyce about art and beauty, and it made me effing furious. Surprised at my response, I had to explain to my friend, I don't give a shit for James Joyce. It was not the words in the quote, but this author is on a patriarchal pedestal. And why? Why would you choose to look and consume that white man's perspective at this point in time when we have access to so many other gorgeous perspectives from brilliant people around the entire world? These feelings so naturally came up in me and out of my mouth, and I felt happy because it shows me that my body and spirit are rejecting unnecessary conditioning, at least some of it," she has in quotes. I think it has to be a choice to consciously choose not to uphold the past by admiring the beneficiaries of patriarchal world culture through who we learn from, who we follow on social media. Personally, I will not read, take in, watch, listen, or appreciate the old his perspective. How interesting, right? To say that out loud is radical, and it is.
Yeah.
It really is. It
absolutely. I'm sure some people are going to be like, what?
But it's just true.
Yeah,
it's
no, absolutely.
True. It's like this is a sign that it's a new day. There are people who are thinking in these ways. Like, yeah, reading this email really just hit me in my chest in all the right ways.
Yeah.
So she goes on to say that as far as fat phobia, such a pervasive thing, incredible judgment, even fear around fatness, it would have been so important to me personally to see a fat woman, designer, architect, visual artist as a young person, my personal fatness, and she has in parentheses, ooh, I love that phrase, personal fatness.
Yeah.
It's delicious. Held me back from feeling I deserved or had the right to go for it. And the fact is, I don't see fat women very often in those fields. I remember hearing a talk from a fat woman who rocked an impeccable style in my 20s, and she was obviously not trying to hide her fatness, which at the time I had a complicated reaction to, but for years after I thought of her and thought, damn, okay, I can be up there giving talks too. It will take so long for us all to shed these stereotypes, as we are all colonized by the thoughts, actions, definitions, borders, language, and systems produced by white cis men, including white cis men. So we can't just indoctrinate ourselves or our little babies with the bullshit that humans invented in the past. Representation matters. And then she has like love beyond reproach, Lauren in Mexico City. Thank you so much, Lauren.
Yeah, that's really amazing. Thank you.
Such a read.
Yeah.
Such a read. So true. Because there are so many voices who now have shown themselves. I mean, they've been talking this whole time, but we haven't been listening until now.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it's great that we get all these different perspectives, and we have so much to learn from all these new voices.
Yeah, it's, you know, people are going to be like, well, you know, James Joyce still had value or whatever, but it's whatever. That's not what it's about.
He's overvalued.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and he's still valued by some. That's fine. We're not saying that he's trash.
Yeah.
We're just saying that he is overvalued.
And there's plenty of other voices that have
more
profound things to say about beauty and art. And
thank you.
Yeah.
I love this. I love this. I mean, all of the responses that we got were amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one was, oh, thank you so much.
So we also have a voice message to play.
Hi, my name's Hunter. I am a art director in New York City. When I was listening to the last episode about representation, I was trying to remember kind of the first instances of seeing gay men in the media from a young age. And I grew up in a very like conservative rural town in Texas, so there weren't a lot of open touch points by any means in my community. So on media, I think the first thing that popped in my head is probably the obvious one, which is Will and Grace. The characters were far older than I was at the time, so that wasn't very accessible. They also kind of seemed like, you know, someone we laughed at, not with, coming from that perspective of a small town, like Texas kid and this sort of Christian conservative family. But as I got older and started kind of questioning myself, not being very sure of things, I think the most relatable, like accessible character in media was actually Marco from Degrassi, The Next Generation. It was a show out of Canada, so I'm sure they were probably a few years ahead in their storytelling, but the characters are a little bit older than me, so I felt like my high school experience was very much following in their footsteps to some degree. And the way they portrayed Marco kind of exploring his own sexuality and questioning himself, the sort of like insecurity and uncertainty that comes with that. Like, even though I wasn't even there yet in my coming out experience, I remember feeling a sense that it could be okay. There's a really small detail that I remember now after all these years of living openly that kind of made an impact, was knowing that this queer character, Marco, in the opening title sequence, he's the one that when he flips around and the camera kind of closes out on his denim jacket and it has the title card, Degrassi Next Generation, like emblazoned across it. And I think in retrospect, it's just, that's a small detail, but rather than having this character sort of like live in the shadows or be this sort of like exoticized storyline, he's really centered and a part of that community and like accepted by all those peers. And so I definitely think in a subliminal way that representation really helped me, and kind of without knowing it even felt there was, gave me a sense that there was hope out there. But I feel like thinking about the media and where I'm from, the best representation that I really experienced was when I moved to Austin and lived in this more urban environment and was in this big college. And I remember meeting like queer and gay people there and just seeing how much they were like me. So it was actually more the representation of the community that helped me realize what was going on and come out. And thinking of that, I feel like I think about social media now, and having worked in social media marketing for a while and kind of watching these influencers, you know, for better or worse, little worlds that they build. I think social media influencers have kind of created this space for everyone to find their own versions of representation across the queer spectrum. I can think of a handful of YouTubers or Instagram people that just by living confidently and openly online, they are reaching people all across the world, not even just in America, but in countries all around the world where it might not even be legal to be gay or to be out, but people can follow them and see themselves in them, and on a very extremely unedited like unfiltered personal level in a way that mainstream media and like narrative stories will just never be able to reach because of the way they're created. And so I feel very inspired. This kind of new tech age, there's a way for people to build communities and see each other in each other in a really meaningful way. I think that's a really cool form of new representation.
I love it.
Yeah. He makes some really good points. The idea about like, even after watching Degrassi, having like an extra level of openness when he was finally around other out open gay people.
Once he was in the community.
Yeah. I said this in the last episode that there weren't really many gay people, openly gay people in high school for me, but I actually went to a college that was probably even less diverse than the high school that I went to. So I didn't really have any gay friends in college either. After college, I moved to Ithaca and there was more gay people, but it wasn't until I moved to New York City that I really finally started to feel comfortable in my own skin and like start to like go through the journey of figuring out who I was, you know, as a gay male.
Yeah.
But also the point about like social media and the way it's making it easier to see influencers and different voices, even if it's not being represented exactly in the media.
Yeah.
And like he said, in those countries that you can't really watch that on TV or be that person in your everyday life, at least social media is a way to sort of like
see that.
Yeah.
See people living in their truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's really important. And it's great that this is a thing that's common now. Like anyone with internet can pick this up.
Well, thank you, Hunter.
It's a new day. Yeah, thank you, Hunter. Yeah. That was amazing. That was really, really great. Thank you.
All right. We have one last message from Brandon. Brandon says, hey, Tux and Steph, I loved your recent minisode on representation in media and why it matters. You asked for stories about that, so I wanted to write in and tell mine. At first glance, I'm someone who appears to have hit the privilege jackpot. White male, heterosexual, cisgendered, Protestant Christian, intelligent, and born into a good family. I do want to acknowledge my privilege in those areas. Those are absolutely things I have never had to struggle with, and I don't want to diminish that. But there is an invisible minority that I am a part of, and that's mental illness. I have bipolar disorder, a condition affecting less than 3% of the population. Its portrayal in the media and pop culture is all over the place, ranging from comical, I changed my mind, I must be bipolar.
Yeah.
That's bullshit.
So harmful.
Yeah. To very harmful, like the psychotic killer in the recent Midsommar.
Yes. Oh, that is much worse.
Yeah.
They're both bad.
Yeah. Yes, one is definitely worse than the other, but they're still not good in any way.
Or accurate.
The reality of bipolar is much more grim. An elevated suicide rate gives it an effective mortality rate more than double that of breast cancer, and it can wreck your life in a number of other ways. We're starting to see some positive, or at least not overwhelmingly negative, portrayals of mental illness in film. For me, the representation that hit me the hardest was Silver Linings Playbook, a film about a man struggling with his recent bipolar diagnosis, falling into a turbulent relationship with a woman who most likely has borderline personality disorder. It was the first time I remember accurately seeing myself on screen and not wanting to cringe. The film also does well showing effective medical treatment, although this point is subtle, comprising only one line towards the end. Ordinarily, when mental illness is portrayed in media, it's shown as something the character must learn to deal with without medical treatment, though through sheer willpower. I still regularly talk to people who feel bad for me, not because I have a serious mental illness, but because I am treating it.
What?
That's so that you, I like don't because even you have to take medication or
what?
It's so fucked.
Would we shame cancer patients like, "Oh, you're getting chemo?"
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
Poor you. Bipolar disorder and several other mental illnesses like major depression are actually classified as disabilities by the US government. We're starting to see some positive portrayals of disability, like the recent Mad Max Fury Road, and even Finding Nemo.
Oh.
I never saw Finding Nemo. As you know, I'm not into anything that was made past 1952.
Yeah. It's in high definition.
Yeah. Ugh, gross. Specifically with mental illness, we're starting to see more positive portrayals like Homeland and Little Miss Sunshine. But much like many of the other growing areas of representation, there are a lot of negative stereotypes to combat and a lot of skeptical audiences to convince.
Yeah, that's true.
Thank you for your informative podcast, Brandon, host of a podcast on movies and mental health called The Peculiar Picture Show, which everyone should totally get into.
Yeah, we'll put the link in the show notes.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you, Brandon. That was really great. It's something that I haven't really had to think about because I haven't really ever had to deal with mental illness in my life or in my family.
Yeah,
but I think it's a really good perspective.
It is, yeah. Something that we kind of forget about because it can be invisible. It's not really handled well in the mainstream, but we're starting to see more and more things. But there's still a lot of people talking about, being bipolar and not at all.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think the idea for his show is also really cool, like to be able to go through specific movies and point out, like, this is how mental illness was handled in this film and why it was good or why it was bad. So hopefully some directors or like screenplay writers or something are going to see that and make a change for the better.
Yeah, I think we're starting to see a change, but we have so, like all representation, we have so much more work to be done.
Yeah, yeah.
So much more work to do. We're not there yet on any of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, things are slowly, baby steps changing.
Yeah. But like we said last time, now that things are starting to change and people that are somehow different.
Yeah.
Other.
Not straight, white, cis, rich, young.
Thin.
Thin. Yeah.
All of these people that are somehow other are finally starting to be seen as people.
And other is the gross majority.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
So we're finally getting more representation of the full spectrum of humanity, which is a net positive.
Yeah.
Finally.
Yeah. And we will get there eventually.
It's
just going to, it's work.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of bullshit, but we'll get there.
Well, these were some amazing perspectives on
really thoughtful stuff,
a range of different varieties of otherness, you know? And hopefully you guys out there listening learned something and maybe identified with some of the stuff people had to say. All right, well, I guess that's the end. That's the end of the episode. Thank you guys so much for listening to Beyond Reproach, the minisode.
Beyond Reproach is proudly recorded in Bushwick, Brooklyn. New episodes are released the first and third Monday of every month. Please note that we are not historians. We are just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. Full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone you think would be into it. Don't forget to follow us on social media. Make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop at beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves. We are on Patreon if anyone would love to show us some love and throw us some nickels to support the production of our show.
This has been Tux Lurzel.
Stephanie Domingo.
Woo-woo.
Bye.
Bye.